Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, thank you for joining me tonight on Mysterious Radio. I am your host, K-Town. My special guest tonight is Dr. Richard Lawrence. He's going to be joining me from the UK. Tonight, we're going to discuss other channeled messages that he received from beings in other dimensions and other realms, as well as how Dr. George King did this exactly. Some other topics we're going to discuss is the UFO phenomena and what Dr. King had to say about that. Now, I want you to keep in mind that Dr. Richard Lawrence was taught by Dr. George King how to connect with beings from higher dimensions. So I'm going to discuss this with him as well. My special guest tonight, returning to the show, is Dr. Richard Lawrence, who co-wrote the book Contact with Gods from Space, Pathway to a New Age, with Dr. George King. Now, Dr. George King was contacted by a race of advanced extraterrestrial beings back in 1954. This was the beginning of Dr. King's life as a primary terrestrial mental channel, as he was called. The medium through whom literally hundreds of communications or transmissions, as they are known, have been given by higher beings from this world and beyond. Dr. Lawrence worked with Dr. George King for years and is going to not only share with us more information about these messages that Dr. King received from these extraterrestrials, but he's also going to share with us his own channeling experiences and the methods used by other mediums. Dr. Lawrence, I want to thank you for joining me again on Mysterious Radio.
Thank you very much for inviting me, K-Town.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And I got some great feedback the last time that you were on the show.
I'm so pleased because, you know, I've done a lot of interviews, and I must say it's a real pleasure to be interviewed by somebody like yourself who's open-minded in the true sense and, you know, does research. I mean, so many interviewers that one comes across, they don't really know much about it, and you've taken the time, and you obviously have a lot of experience, so it's a pleasure for me too.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. Now, before we get started, Dr. Lawrence, please go ahead and give the listeners a little more information about yourself in case they did not hear the other show and how you actually got started working with Dr. George King.
Yes, certainly. I came across Dr. King when I was at university. He was in America. He lived in America from 1959 predominantly. He was a British citizen and also a resident there. And he traveled here regularly, but he was based in Hollywood in California. But I came across his writings and his teachings while I was studying in the north of England at a university. And I had a massive UFO sighting. And many experiences. I think that's one of the key things that I would stress and something we might want to talk about at some future time. You know, in fact, we call it, those of us who practice his teachings and practices. We call it the King Yoga Experience. And there's many, many ways you can have that. And I think even though sometimes some of the teachings that we have received through Dr. King are quite advanced. We talked about the Nine Freedoms, which I think is the greatest work on earth, a book I know of. But if you're having these experiences, and you will have them if you practice these things in one way or another, then it will give you knowledge and inner certainty of the truth of it. And that's what happened to me. And then later, quite soon, actually, I was privileged to meet him because he used to come over, and my parents lived near to the headquarters in London. And I sort of got to know him then, even as a student, and ran errands for him. And gradually, I was school teacher after I left university, but soon he employed me. And then we became later on firm friends, as well as, of course, he was way above my level. I mean, I was a disciple, if you like, a student, but also we became very firm friends for the last, I would say, 20 years of his life, really.
All right, very good. Thank you for sharing that. Let's first start off by talking about your own channeling experiences, and then we're going to discuss Dr. King's abilities and the messages that he received. Now, from my understanding, your ability came through your daily practice of advanced yoga techniques, correct?
Correct. I mean, I was doing in particular yoga breathing exercises and visualizing the psychic centers, the higher ones in a safe way. And this is some of the exercises he's taught in a book called Realize Your Inner Potential that I co-authored. Actually, the last book he wrote, and I was privileged to be his co-author. And I was doing those way back then, and also a lot of mantra yoga. I'd say those were the two main things that I would imagine awakened this within me. I started to have psychic experiences. I would stress that the channeling that I've done isn't in the same league, or, you know, shouldn't really be on the same page as what Dr. King did, because what he did, and as a matter of fact, I'd go further than that, and we'll talk about that later if you like. I don't know of any other medium, even some of the great ones who have done mediumship, such as an Alice Bailey or others, who really are on the same page as him. But we can talk about the whys and wherefores of the technique he used. But in my case, I started to develop psychic powers. I started to use the crystal ball and give readings, and they were very accurate. And then I started to be contacted, and the main ability, if you like, that I've used is what used to be called clairaudience, which is psychic hearing. And that, by the way, is not unique to people who we think of as mediums. I mean, if you go through history, you'll find a lot of names such as Socrates, Saint Joan, William Blake, if I don't know how well known he is over there, but he's a poet and artist, Robert Schumann, the composer, Sir Winston Churchill, a great philosopher from Sweden called Swedenborg in the late 17th century, and others. So these are all people who've claimed some kind of contact with a higher being, and in most cases they've claimed to have a dictation, never mind some of the religious figures of history. So in my case, that started to happen. I tried a few things. I experimented even for a short while with actually having guides, and I'm not here, let me stress, talking about extraterrestrial intelligences or even masters. I'm talking about guides, and as I've gone through the decades, I've been honored, really, that some higher guides, as I've managed to progress. I think it's one of the key pointers, actually, with mediumship. If you yourself progress spiritually as an individual, you're able to raise your level of consciousness to a higher level, and then you can be used by a higher caliber, if you like, or a more advanced, should we say, spiritual guide.
Okay, so let's dive into this a little bit deeper. You said your psychic ability came about during your practice of advanced techniques in yoga. So I'm assuming this took years before you actually had the ability to make contact, correct?
You are right about that. I mean, but in my case, the psychic abilities started to become apparent, I would say. So I'd be after about 5 years, perhaps. And I started then to be able to, as I mentioned, use the crystal ball. I actually was really into psychic things. My best-selling book, actually, is called Unlock Your Psychic Powers, but it's nowhere near my best book in terms of its content, but it's one that really started me off as an author. And that was because I just went into every area of psychic development almost that I could find. I used many methods of divination, and I used different types of mediumship and learned many things, made mistakes as well. And then with Dr. King's guidance, I must say, and I'm sure unseen help and tremendous help from those on higher realms, I sort of honed it down until eventually I wrote a book with my very good friend Mark Bennett, who co-authored this with me, God's Guides and Guardian Angels, which actually contained some of the communications I'd received, which are, I think, really fantastic. I don't mean that what I did was fantastic, but some of the messages given from the other side are quite fantastic, I think. One of them in particular, given, I believe, by Dante, I think I just read it again today, is just a fantastic piece of writing. I couldn't possibly have written that myself, but that was after 25 years of practicing, that before I ever went into print.
Okay, so yes, that is something I would like to talk about. Now, I know you were able to contact different poets, so can you tell us some things that they actually shared with you?
Well, I'll give you an example, if you like. I'll read you a poem, if you like. That what happened was that in a particular period, which would be, 12, 13 years ago, roughly, a project started, which was not my idea, but I now think it was a very, very clever idea. On the other realms, they decided their interest was twofold, really. One was to demonstrate mediumship and demonstrate the channeling works. And the other was, because they were interested in some of them anyway, particularly in the Aetherius Society, which I'm the secretary of, they were interested in, as it were, paving the way for people to look into Dr. King's much higher, more elevated transmissions. And so that was their raison d'etre. And we did get, in Britain in particular, massive media coverage from this book, God's Guides and Guardian Angels. And because why it's so clever is that I think with a poem, you have to have a certain sort of, you have to have a certain things. I mean, you might have a rhyme, you might have a meter. So every word counts. So, you know, it's rather different. Some mediums are very, I don't wish to be rude here, because I'm sure they're on the whole, not always, but on the whole, very good, well-meaning, and so on. And the content of what they deliver might be good and benign, but they're not getting it all that accurately sometimes. And by accurately, I don't just mean the general mood or the general feeling, because sometimes they'll get an impression and then they'll sort of feel what's being said in a way, and then they'll put it into their own words. And this can happen subconsciously as well. But with a poem, you can't do that, especially if it's going to rhyme. Now, this one in particular, which is, I just think, a good example, I got this very, very quickly, too quickly to really notice what was being said. I knew the words, but I didn't really think about their meaning. As a matter of fact, if you're doing the kind of channeling that I do, which is not in a trance, but extremely intensively concentrating on it, and you have to concentrate hard on it, it's not a good idea to think about what's being said while you're receiving it. Strangely enough, it might surprise people, because if you do, then your own mind can come in, even unwittingly, and you'll start to think about it, and you might add to it and discolor it with your own thoughts. All you're trying to do is to get the words as they're being delivered, and sometimes it can be very, very quick, and it almost hurts the hand. So this one is an example like that. I didn't have time to think about it. I wrote it down, and shall I read it to you, or some of it to you? Would that be a good idea?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, so this was called, I gave it this title, Journey with No End, but I wasn't given a title, and it just went like this. Meandering through the valley's floor, a tributary leads to the shore, and so it is with human thought, which leads to all but comes from naught. A finite ray of God's own light, starting dull and ending bright, an emblem of a future day of life which comes from mortal clay. And so it shines its radiant beams upon the vast unwanted dreams of reckless men and hopeless fools, of vagabonds who shape their tools from earthy fantasies so bleak that even loose-tongued knaves won't speak of all they want in darkest night, a sad reflection of their blight. But tarry not with wretched thought, for e'en from this can light be brought. When truth bears down upon its prey, your life will turn from night to day. The ne'er-do-wells become the free. The tributary leads to the sea. The ocean's waves absorb the dross, an alchemy of human loss, until it meets infinity, a fragment of eternity, a monumental beauteous sight when thought's consumed in purest light. This is the journey with no end, in company with God's timeless friend, the soundless sound, the voiceless voice, the thought at which all men rejoice, the spirit speaks, the worlds are still, for 'tis the thing called divine will, and that all started with a thought upon which God's magic has been wrought. So that's the poem which I wrote down, K-Town. I wrote it very quickly, and several things one can notice, and this is why I think it's so clever, that the plan they I was going to say cooked up, but they devised, is that the language in that is not language that I would use. It's and I looked up some of the words, and they're 17th century phrases, a lot of them. It's come from the sort of Shakespearean sort of era of words. The other thing is, I found out, because someone who knows these things, and it's in iambic tetrameters, which is just a form of rhyme that was used. Sorry, a meter, not a rhyme, that was used at that time, and it's very commonly used in that period as well. So you've got rhyme, you've got 17th century language, and you've got meter, which was used, which is known as iambic tetrameters, which I'd never really heard of, or if I had, I'd forgotten. And I simply couldn't concoct a thing like that, which rhymed and metered, you know, in about 3 minutes flat. Never mind look and see what the meaning was. And then it gradually sort of came to me who the authors were, and neither of them had I ever heard of, which is another interesting thing. So one was called Sir William Davenant, and the other was called Fouke Greville. And I looked these two up, and they were actual people in the 17th century. One actually was Shakespeare's godson, but they're not really famous, not to me anyway. And they sort of dabbled in poetry, or dabbled. They actually were poets, both of them. And so that too was very authentic. And it's, I think, just a good, whether people like that kind of poetry or not, a good demonstration of channeling and the authenticity of channeling.
I would say so. Dr. Lawrence, are you meditating before you actually receive these messages?
Well, what often happens, actually, for me anyway, it can be very good first thing in the morning, for me, to do something like that. I mean, I because then you're in a composed state. But certainly what I would, I mean, meditation is a word that means many different things to different people. So it might be a kind of a lower form of meditation, perhaps you'd call it. But the key thing is concentration. I mean, I've got a few little sort of yardsticks for how you can get, you know, genuine channeling. And one of those is, shall I go through them? I had a sort of a 9-point guide.
That'll be fine.
Okay. So first of all, this is how you judge a piece of channeling. One would be the nature of the material. Is it any good? Is it interesting? Is it true? Does it tell you anything? And so that's the first. And that's very basic, but some channeling, you think, why bother with it? You know, it's there's nothing there much. Secondly, if you're the person doing it, you might have some psychic experiences while you're doing it. Now, not everyone would need to do that. I would not recommend people to go into a trance. As I mentioned, when I first started, for a short while, I did try allowing guides to speak through me using my voice, and I found that it had a sort of debilitating effect upon me doing that. I think it was because I was in a trance which was and I don't mean this as a bad thing, but partly negative. In other words, it was negating my consciousness a bit to let them speak through me. And I sense a loss of will within myself, and I think it can lead to, you know, well, it can lead to dangerous things if you're not careful. So I stopped doing that for that reason. I could talk more about that. It's another aspect. But however, if you do have certain, some people might just get some words and possibly write them down or speak them out or record them. But if you are also having a psychic experience, it can help. So for example, if you're able to hear, and this is what I try to do, this is what I do most of the time. And so you can hear the intonation of the voice to some degree, psychically speaking, that's clairaudience. You can very easily then tell the difference between your own thoughts and an outside thought. And so it's not going to be just coming from yourself. I mean, I do think there are some people who say they're channeling things which are actually their own inspirations, but they just call them channeled. And they may be good, but there is a difference. And I believe you should know that difference if you possibly can. And psychic abilities, not just clairaudience, you might have clairvision. I mean, a psychic like Swedenborg and William Blake, to name two, although they didn't call themselves psychics, they would actually see the intelligence who was communicating with them clairvoyantly, visually. So that helps too. Another thing you need to do, so you are concentrating intently, but at the same time you're trying to suspend your own conscious thought process, if that doesn't sound like a contradiction in terms. You're focused on the words. You're not necessarily thinking about what they mean. You just want to get them. So if there's a word, and in a poem, that's crucial because it might be a rhyming word, for example, or a meter. So sometimes in my case, I will actually just get letters. So rather than saying the word building, for example, I might get building sometimes when I'm really, and I'm just spelling it out like that, not thinking about what it even means, just writing it down. But you don't want to let your own mind come in and mess it up. So you're intensely concentrating. Before you start, though, and somewhere down the line, you will have developed a sort of meditative, contemplative ability. You must have, or it can't happen, where you can be receptive to an outside source. You are receiving impressions, thoughts, in whatever way you're doing it, from an outside source. And that's a very contemplative state to be in. And then, as I mentioned, you focus on the words. And sometimes, as I also mentioned, you're writing so fast, if you're writing it down, it's not automatic writing where you've lost the control of your hand. I wouldn't recommend anything, actually, where you lose control, because that can be dangerous, which I'm happy to explain. But if you're just getting it, you're writing it down, sometimes you can't hardly think. It's all you can do to get the words down. And then just analyze it, use your logic to analyze it afterwards, to assess it. And then most important of all on my list, I would say, is intuition. You absolutely have to have your own intuition. And that's an error. And I slightly made that when I first started that error, because it was so exciting, I found, that I stopped to tune in myself using my own intuition to what was going on. And that's your barometer. And you have to keep that alive, that flame alive, and assess what's going on. So for example, you might get someone who wants to communicate with you and it's not appropriate. They're not a person you'd want a message from and not a person you want to have a rapport with, even though they're on the other realms. And then your intuition can guide you and then you just don't do it. You've got to be able to switch it on and off like a tap, which is easier said than done, I must say.
Oh, fascinating. So are you able to channel certain spirits?
I am. I mean, for example, lately, I've sort of no longer focusing on poems. That was a whole period. And it culminated, I would say, with three main ones, and it went beyond poems to writings. And there was quite a piece. We have a journal over here called Psychic News, very old. I think it could even be 100 years old. I don't know. But it's an old journal here. And they featured this because it was very unusual. And they published some excerpts. And I ended up with some communications from three incredibly big literary figures, actually. One was Dante, as I mentioned. Another was Tolstoy, I believe, and a third was and is Sir Francis Bacon, who I actually believe, I don't know whether people have heard much of Sir Francis Bacon in America, but he was a contemporary of Shakespeare, and there are many who believed actually that he wrote a lot of the Shakespeare plays, a lot, you know, that there was a whole team effort on that, and he's a big figure over here anyway in Europe, a Rosicrucian and so on. And I ended up with him. I got a very interesting message actually from Sir Francis Bacon, which is not a poem, where he met someone who'd guided me for a long time, who was a lama, a Tibetan lama, and the two of them met. It's rather beautiful. Can I just read a bit of that?
Oh, wow, yes, please do.
So he said this. He said, in a remote region, which is aligned to the Himalayas, and this is all happening on the other realms, I would stress, I met a saint on a hill. He spoke to me such words. Such pure emanations poured from his soul as he spoke. I knew what bliss he must have known. Into his eyes I looked, their depth embraced me. I returned his love with rose-crossed blessings. The two of us were one. We knew the same things, he and I, and yet he had traveled down a different road from me. He had experienced privations unbeknown to such as I, as he purged through discipline his reluctant mutineers, which clung to basic instincts and selfish conduct. We all have them, don't we? These lower impulses of our nature which resist such transmutation. But mine were trained in a different way, not so much through strict detachment as through activation in the cause of a higher good, that of literature, art, and science too, for all these come from the same expression when they are properly accomplished. And through these different journeys, we'd both arrived at the same place, an abode of light, which transcends even the path itself and makes it redundant for that time, for in that time is time itself redundant, except for now. And he's very involved. I think he and Dante are both very advanced, in my opinion. But they're very much, they're not ascended beings, I don't believe at all. I'm not saying that. They're on higher realms. And it's interesting that, you know, when you go to those other realms anyway, you tend to meet up with people not of a particular culture, like as we might do here, but of the same spiritual level as yourself. And that's a beautiful example of it, where he met someone from an entirely different background, a Tibetan Lama, but who'd arrived at the same place as he had through his science and his literature and so on.
All right. So now I want to talk about the dangers, because you keep bringing it up. So what are the inherent dangers when it comes to channeling and these advanced forms of meditation?
Well, see, the dangers, I suppose, are twofold. I did a series of lectures over here, which is a bit of a corny title. It's called Channeling the Good, the Bad, and the Others. And in that, you know, I spelt out that two bad things really can happen to you. And I'm assuming that the medium here is a genuine, sincere person, by the way. Obviously, you get, if you're a con man or something like that, that's a whole different ball game. But if you're a genuine person, and most of the people I meet, I think, are genuine people, and you don't have control, and Dr. King stressed this far better than I can, and he knew infinitely more than I do, that if you don't have control over the state you're using, particularly if it's a trance state, then you're handing over control to your guide. Now, in fact, in Britain and probably in America, and other countries too, in the spiritualist movement, they would even use the word control. they would call the guide the control sometimes. And that's what's happening if you're entering a trance. And by a trance, I mean that unlike what I've been describing of clairaudience and telepathy and so on, your voice is being used, and you're actually, they are using your larynx virtually to deliver their message. Now, if you do that by virtually surrendering your will and giving over of your mind and weakening yourself to enable them to take you over, you might, when you first do it, you might get a very, very good message. You probably may not remember that message. You may have to be told afterwards or hear it afterwards. But you have no control of it. But if the controlling guide happens to be a good soul, they won't abuse you at all, and they will help you, and they'll give their good message, and afterwards they'll help you to return to full consciousness out of that trance, and all will go well. But the danger is that you have started to weaken yourself. And I mentioned, even in this little time experience I had, I found where I was only in a partial trance, but even I found a lessening. I could feel a weakening of my will, and I stopped doing it. I shouldn't really have started doing it, as a matter of fact, because Dr. King made it clear. He used to say negative trance, as he called it, is, I think this is roughly what he said, is safer than pitching a tent on the Hollywood freeway. Because the danger, K-Town, is that some hostile, I'm afraid there are hostile intelligences as well, who like to mess about with people, they could move in on you, and they could take you over, and then the worst case scenario would be a possession case. It means you no longer have control over what you're doing at all. So that's what I would call a real danger to a person if they started doing that. There are other sort of much lesser dangers, but if, let's say, you're not completely accurate, you might get, 80% of it right if you're good. The 20% that is wrong could actually mislead you, and so on. So it's something you need to, I haven't come across anyone, by the way, who perfected mediumship like Dr. King, or even described it as he did, or even claimed to do what he did. I'm not saying he's the only one, not at all. There's some wonderful mediums, and have been for thousands of years. But he took it to an absolute, and later on I'll describe how he did it, controlled exercise of exactitude. But you don't need to do that, but you do need to be aware also that your own subconscious mind can come in and discolor it. Now, that's not nearly as dangerous as the negative trance I described before, but it could lead you to a deluding message. So that's another of the dangers that can come in. And I think it's very good in any psychic development. I've taught thousands of people psychic development to be able to say, I don't know. Sometimes you'll get something, you don't know what it means. I think a lot of psychics, and I used to do a radio show in England where psychics came on, and I noticed they didn't want to say, I don't know. They almost felt duty-bound to know, and then you start inventing things, and that's dangerous. You've got to stick to the truth, and as this is not quite right, but along the lines of Socrates saying, you've got to know what you don't know.
It sounds like the hardest part of it is to take your own mind out of the process.
Yes. Yeah. I've come to the conclusion, actually, myself, and this is just my opinion here, that I wouldn't recommend anybody to be used as a channel. And by be used as a channel, I mean have their voice used and be taken over in a trance, unless they are virtually an adept or an extremely advanced mystic. I wouldn't do it. I would use another method where you, because you don't need to do that. Admittedly, if you can do that, it's far better for the listener, because they get the voice and they get the feeling and of the communicator. It's a much better delivery in every way. But I myself, and I stress this is my opinion, having done it for a long time, I don't think it's safe for someone unless they're very advanced, probably an adept or something in mysticism and yoga. But they can channel, though. Please let me they can certainly channel below that stage. They can certainly get communications, receive them telepathically, write them down, or record them in their own voice. But I would keep full control over everything, the whole process, at all times.
All right, very good. That's something to take into consideration if you decide to try channeling. Okay, so one thing I want to know is the practice of advanced yoga necessary to open yourself up to communication with these advanced beings?
I would say not strictly, because yoga is a word. Now, when Dr. King used the word yoga, he used it in an all-embracing sense. But nowadays, and in those days when he was doing it, which would be the 1940s and early 50s, it was very rare, you know, especially for a man in England after the Second World War, very conservative time. I mean, over here, you know, you didn't leave the house without a tie on and things like that. It was a very formal, serious place. I don't know whether it was the same in America. Maybe it was. But, you know, no one did yoga, really. But unless they'd come over. Of course, there were people like Vivekananda and other great yogis who'd come over and taught people. So that's wrong. People did do yoga, but it wasn't widely practiced as today. So most people, if you say yoga to them now, and there are millions of people who do it, they're thinking toning up my body, you know, slimming down, improving my health, posture. That is not what Dr. King meant by yoga. I mean, he did do a bit of that, but not for that reason. He meant the advanced aspects of a thing called Kundalini, which is a fascinating topic in itself, the psychic centers or chakras, having real control over them, wakening them, opening them, and using all sorts of breathing exercises. He would do it 8 hours a day for 10 years. And he actually said that you shouldn't enter trance to as a medium unless you've done yoga for 10 years. But he there wasn't meaning, as I mentioned, these sort of body toning type exercises so much. You might do a bit of that. It was all for the advanced focus of the mind, which is essential to be a medium, if you're going to use trance mediumship anyway.
All right, when we come back, we're going to discuss the messages received from an advanced race of extraterrestrials by the late Dr. George King when we return right after this. And now let's talk about Dr. George King, who was not only a channeler, but also a medium. Some may think that they are the same thing and they serve the same purpose, but they do not, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everyone who's doing spiritual work and is channeling, and that's great. But it's just that Dr. King was, I've discovered more and more as the years, even since his passing 20 years ago. As we're recording this, it's his birthday, by the way, 99 years ago today. Yeah, so we did drink his toast today. But seriously speaking, as well as sending a lot of spiritual energy out in his memory, more importantly, I should say. But if I can illustrate, when he first had his contacts, and he was trying to explain, and here we are in the mid-50s when he's doing this, how he did it. He'd use a phrase like this, and this is something he wrote. He said this: the interplanetary communicators are able to transmit their thoughts upon a magnetic beam which acts as a carrier wave. This beam, or carrier wave, can be directed by their applied mental pressures with almost uncanny accuracy towards any human being, whether capable of conscious reception or not. Now, you know, having looked at, say, Theosophy, which came you know, earlier on, people like Alice Bailey and Madame Blavatsky and some of the other great mediums of that period, and there were hundreds of mediums at that time in England alone. None of them, first of all, I don't think any of the guides who were communicating through them would, on the other realms of this earth, would be able to do that. I don't think they'd be able to. Well, I won't. I'll be careful. I'll correct myself. Maybe on the highest of realms, and certainly the ascended beings. But that aside, they wouldn't be able to transmit their thought as a beam or carrier wave applied by with applied mental pressures at almost uncanny accuracy. That's not what they do. I mean, they might be extremely powerful, and some of them are, and they can send you a thought form that is, I mean, in my case, for example, if I get contacted or somebody wishes to contact me, I physically feel it. They will cause me to physically feel something on my skin, might be on my hand, it might be on my leg, and until I acknowledge it, it won't stop, and then they know that I've got the message. So that's what happens to me. But that's, and then they'll give the message by impressing their thoughts upon you and possibly their feelings upon you, and you, and sometimes actual words upon you. But that's very different from transmitting a beam as a carrier wave. So that's the first point I'd make. I don't think most communicators could do that, in my opinion. Even if they could do it, though, most mediums wouldn't be able to receive it. Now, I'll explain how he received it. And again, I'll use his words written in the 1950s. He said, "The yogic trance condition is employed by me in order to tune into and receive the mental stimuli directed by the interplanetary communicators. I have learned how to raise the psychic current, kundalini, from the lower centers and lodge it in a certain higher chakra," that's a psychic center, "in order to activate that center to such a degree that prolonged concentration upon the actual carrier beam which conveys the thought transmission is possible. At the same time, I completely detach myself from the results of the sound translation to such an extent that my own pet likes, dislikes, and opinions of the conscious mind cannot discolor the actual message itself." So I'm sorry if it sounds a bit technical and wordy, but you can see here that he's describing a very technical process. And, you know, I've met hundreds, well, dozens, let's say, of mediums. Most of them, they can't really explain it. They know what they're doing, and I don't blame them for that. You don't have to be able to explain it. But it's certainly not a technical procedure like this, where you're raising an inner force known as kundalini, lodging it in a certain psychic center, so that that psychic center can then receive the emanation, and then it's the effect of that causes the brain of Dr. King, in this case, to translate it so it's in English because he's English. The communicator may not, isn't English. They're just transmitting pure thought, and then it comes out through his voice because he's in a controlled but extremely deep trance. And I do apologize, actually, because I as I'm speaking, I know this all sounds rather complicated and technical. But I'm just trying to illustrate the lengths to which Dr. King went.
No, it's fine. I was going to add that this is an extremely rare and advanced form of mediumship, and I've never heard anybody do this until Dr. King.
You're right. I agree.
Yes, and then Dr. King also did this in public, so that took it up another notch or two.
Exactly. And I don't know if I've mentioned to you or not the last time we spoke, but he had a small group. I mean, he was contacted in 1954. And of course, you can imagine how the world would react then to somebody claiming what he claimed. Never mind. I mean, it's still today. It can be rather controversial and it can be ridiculed. But then it was in England, it was just crazy to people. And the first time that he went in public, which was in 1955 in January, to actually in a public hall receive a transmission, all the little group that he had around them, and he had this group of, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 people by then around him, meeting in his small apartment in London, in northwest London, not one of them turned up at his side. He was completely left alone. It was so controversial. But that's snowballed and people started to get interested, certain types of people. I mean, there are certain types of people who must listen to your program, you know, who are listening to us now, who can see beyond the conditioning of this physical realm and are attracted by a certain light, and all power to them for that.
I agree. There are people that are waking up to the fact that there is more than just this physical reality we live in. Now, I don't know if you said this, and forgive me if I missed it, but was Dr. King born a medium?
Well, he was born, I mean, it's a great question, actually, and I'm going to tell you the truth as I see it. I believe Dr. King wasn't even from this world. That's what, you know, he didn't go around saying that. It's pretty clear, and I think all of us in the Aetherius Society hold that view. And he was born in a little tiny village, actually, in England. At his birth, his grandmother, who was quite a well-known psychic locally from where she lived, was present at the birth, his mother's mother, and she said the words to her daughter, who was called Mary, "Mary, this child is not of this earth." So, and I think she was right. And so he was born with unusual abilities. He had psychic abilities as a child. For example, to name one thing, he, as a child, knew, without being taught, how to pray in an extremely dynamic manner, a healing manner, which wasn't practiced in the churches of the day, probably isn't today in many churches, but he just knew how to do it, and he had amazing results. Another thing he experienced was light. If in the higher chakra, the third eye, so-called, you can start to see lights, as it were, in the head. You have to be careful with it, but it's a very good and natural thing. Sometimes it isn't really that third eye. It might be a lower center that you're actually seeing a reflection of it, but nevertheless, it appears as a light. Now, some people take a long time practicing certain breathing exercises and visualizations before they're able to do that at all. But as a child, he saw it all the time. He had to almost, you know, it was almost a trouble for him. He's closing his eyes and the lights were there. So he wasn't practicing mediumship, but he came from a family. As I say, his grandmother was a well-known, accomplished psychic. There was no question about life after death at all. Contacts with those who passed on was something he accepted fully, and he gravitated towards it. I could talk at length about his early life and his later life, but yes, to answer your question, he was, I would say, latently mediumistic. Yes.
Now, people that channel these spirits or groups of spirits, do they usually maintain that communication throughout their entire life?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I have found myself that, you know, I've been on a bit of a journey, and I've found that because I've been, you know, in a very small way, I'm nothing, I'm not claiming to be anything particular, but I have managed to develop, spiritually over the years. And as I've done so, I've been able to contact a higher caliber of guide, shall we say. And, for example, on my website now, there's some messages there, which some of which actually relate more to the Aetherius Society, which I didn't used to get so much. But they are more humble, I find, often, such guides. They are not so flowery in their language sometimes. They're not so interested in saying who they are or what their name is sometimes, but they are more advanced. So I do think an individual can progress on. It doesn't mean they'll completely cut off from others, but there are certain guides that I used to get at one time that I wouldn't get now, because you can't focus on two areas at once. And actually, one of the biggest and most simple secrets I should have mentioned about mediumship, actually, is that it's a state of rapport, and I think everyone will understand that. So the medium themselves has to be at roughly the same level as the person communicating through them. That's a very good yardstick for discrimination. And by that I mean that while the communication is being delivered in whatever way it is, there is a rapport of level of mentality between the medium and the guide, so or the high being, whatever that intelligence is. So therefore, in the Dr. King's case, before he ever started channeling beings from other planets, he was a master of yoga, which means he could raise the kundalini, which means he could practice a thing called samadhi, which is the most elevated and deep form of meditation, and even beyond that. And so he could get his mind onto that level, which means he was in rapport with a being such as, for example, and I know this is controversial, the Master Jesus. And then the Master Jesus, later on, could use him because of that. Now, if a person who's very accurate as a medium, and I think you're right, a lot of people who don't do that, they stay with the same guide throughout their life, then, you know, they might be really good at it, but they won't go move on to a higher level of contact. Let's put it that way. It's real. And I think that's one of the things some people don't realize, and they think it's all fascinating, but it's a science. Perhaps that's the way I should put it.
All right. Now let's get into some of these messages that Dr. King received. So can you tell us how many years was he communicating with these beings?
43. And he was communicating with them, or they were communicating with him, I should say, sometimes the other way around too, right up till the last weeks of his life. He was actually on call. He regarded himself as being on call for 24 hours a day throughout that 43 years. So that, again, I think, puts him in a unique caliber, because even if you're, I don't know, president of the United States, or, you know, top chairman of a massive corporation, you might be on call for a few years, but it comes to an end, and that's that. You might even get a break in the middle. But he never was off duty, actually, not fully off duty. And I went on vacations with him and different places, and it could all come to an end if perhaps there was an earthquake in Mexico City and certain powers wanted prayer energy sent, and that's it. He stopped everything and took a communication, whatever it took. But what I would also say is that he practiced the type of transmission where his voice was used, and they are absolutely beautiful, Keitan. I recommend listeners to go to Aetherius, Aetherius.org, and you can hear these voices. I mean, actually, some people have recognized the Master Jesus from hearing the voice without being told it was him, because it's so distinctive. Oh, now, wow. That type of mediumship he did between 1954 and 1980, or it could be early 81, round there. After that, he no longer did that type of mediumship. He never explained it, but I think it was known. It could have been his health age. I'm not sure, but he was no longer doing that. But he did continue, though, and continue extremely regularly receiving mental transmissions, which is the other method he used, where he wasn't actually channeling the voice, but he was writing down. And I've been in the room with him, actually, when he did this. I was in the room with him when he got a message about the Chernobyl disaster just before it happened. And he would write that down as he received it. And there's lots of those. Some of them are published in one of my books, actually, called UFOs and the Extraterrestrial Message.
Okay, so was he given that information as a warning to people?
The Chernobyl one was actually to, not so much as a warning, and let me be absolutely clear, he wasn't told it was Chernobyl. He was told an accident or a disaster was about to strike, and it was necessary for us to take action. And this would be, I think, something in the region of 4 or 5 hours before it happened. It was necessary for a radiation of energy in cooperation with beings from other worlds to be sent out. And this program of energy started an hour to an hour, something around an hour-ish, before the actual disaster happened. And the idea then being to lessen one of the main preoccupations of communicating extraterrestrials, actually not just contacts with Dr. King, others too, has been their concern for the nuclear effect and the nuclear disasters and radioactivity. And it was designed to lessen it. So it wasn't so much a warning as direct action. And 16 years later, Pravda, by the way, published the fact that a UFO was seen hovering over Chernobyl, over one of the power stations, and did prevent. I think they said it was four times or something less severe than it would have been had that UFO not been there.
Oh, all right. Well, I had not heard that. Now I'm going to go online and look for UFO photos by the Chernobyl incident. I do want to know, however, what other things Dr. King was told about the UFO phenomena.
Well, he, I have to say, was more interested in the plan and the beings on them and why they're here than the actual craft. What he said was that the Earth is about to go through a massive change. That change has more to do with the planet, the Mother Earth, great living female intelligence, the most holy being we will ever touch, physically touch. Very sacred ground. I'm sure there's a lot of people, especially Native American people and so on, who really appreciate that very deeply, and all over the world. But he said that there was a great change going to take place, and therefore humanity had to change, and in various ways. A nuclear experimentation was only one of them, and therefore certain high and advanced communications had to be given to Earth, and not only teachings but missions for us to perform to help to bring about this change upon Earth, which you might loosely call the coming of the new age. That's a summary of it. I could say a lot more than that, but that's why they chose at this time to have, I believe, one of their own incarnate on Earth and to deliver these absolutely fantastic teachings, one of which we spoke about last time, the Nine Freedoms.
Okay, so is ascension part of it?
It does, I suppose, yes. I mean, ascension, it's a slightly different topic, but it's a fascinating topic, and it's covered in the Nine Freedoms, of course. And that's where we're all headed on Earth. Eventually, when we're ready, we will ascend. And when we do, that's through the lives. When we do, we won't need to reincarnate anymore as we do at present. At the moment, we reincarnate, then we spend a period of time after death, so-called death, on other realms. And then when we go to the other realms, we go, as I mentioned earlier, with beings of a similar level to ourselves. Then we reincarnate again and we have another life. And so it goes on. Some people can remember their past lives. There's some outstanding cases of people who aren't even particularly spiritually inclined, who remember their former lives in some detail. And then eventually, though, we'll ascend. And then when we ascend, we won't need to carry on with this. We'll be free of that, and we'll be able to, and all the beings on other worlds are of that caliber or higher than that caliber. They've been through what we would call the initiation of ascension.
All right, so please clarify this for me. I did read this, and I just want to get your take on it, that these beings are waiting for us to go through our process, our spiritual transition.
Yes, they are waiting on us. It's very true. They won't interfere with us. They could do, I say they could do in theory, but they couldn't do from a karmic point of view, because they will never disobey the karmic law, and the karmic law determines what we need in order to learn, in order to advance. And if they were to come down here and just sort all our problems out, we'd learn absolutely nothing except to be even more lazy than we already are on this planet. Sorry to put it that way. So they're very patient indeed. I mean, we have one knowledge of a craft known as Satellite Number 3, which comes into orbit at certain times of the year. The next time it'll be coming in orbit this year is April the 18th. And it stays in for a period of time. And there you have intelligences, really patient beings waiting for us. And what they do is that when people on this earth do anything spiritual, it doesn't matter whether they're religious or not, or what religion they're on, or whether they believe in UFOs or not, if they do something spiritual to help others, unselfish, some form of service, they will potentize that act to make it much more effective and powerful as a karmic manipulation, if you like to use that phrase, by a factor of 3,000 times. Now, that's a fantastic thing, but it's almost tragic that these beings who could sort our world out for them relatively easily and wouldn't never engage in the ghastly thing, a mad thing called war, for example, or have a terribly unfair distribution of wealth as we have on this earth and all the other things we have and live with and just get used to. Such beings, though, have to actually wait on us, and they do. So I agree with the other mediums or people you've spoken to on that point. Absolutely. They are waiting extremely patiently. Every step we take towards them, they will take two towards us. But we have to do something. And that was Dr. King's absolute motto. I mean, I actually believe in the case of Dr. King, he went to extreme lengths to be the channel that he was. Possibly, I don't know this, he went further than these beings might have required. I don't know. But he would do that because he would regard that as also a karmic manipulation, if you like, to enable them. You know, because he was making all that effort that he made, they could use him. And that's one of the secrets as well.
All right, understood. Now, my very last question for you, Dr. Lawrence, is, have you channeled Dr. King?
I don't claim to have channeled Dr. King. No, I have definitely seen him. I'm definitely aware of his presence, and I'm not alone in that. And I've had some impressions, some feelings from him on many occasions, for sure. I had those when he was alive, as a matter of fact, but in a different part of the world from me. But certainly I've had that, and I'm not alone in that, but I don't claim at all as a public thing to channel Dr. King, no.
Okay, but you have seen him?
I've seen him. Others have seen him, actually. I've given lectures, for example, with members of the public who've never met him and never actually heard of him before, and more than once, they have told me that they've seen him standing behind me.
And I'm not surprised about that. You have done a wonderful job keeping Dr. King's teachings alive, and I commend you for that. All right, before we go, please tell my listeners where they can find more information about you and Dr. King.
Thank you, I will. So, I would go for Dr. King to the Aetherius Society website, which is Aetherius, Aetherius.org. It's a great website, fascinating, lots to see there and learn. My website is just richardlawrence.co.uk. Please come and visit my website. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to write to me there. And maybe, K-Town, I could end, perhaps, with just a few lines, because I read some of my channeling, so I'd rather read a much greater form of channeling, which is the channeling of the Master Jesus in the 12 Blessings through Dr. King. And we have a website, actually, called 12blessings.org. That's 12blessings.org that people can go to and join in every week, if they wish to, in the practice. And there's some rather wonderful words here about what God really is. And the Master Jesus refers to that as the Absolute. And he says this: "Blessed is the Absolute. Not even the supreme lords of all creation could do justice to the picturization of the magnificence of this. For it is the former of the great cause, which coming before potential, these ones can use. It is the I Am within man. It is the life within all things. It is the rain, it is the drought, it is the gentle breeze of summertime, it is the mighty wind across the seas, it is the seas. It is the emptiness of space, it is the fullness contained within space, it is the worlds, it is ever and forever and forever, it is infinity. And yet it is more than this, for it is behind even these things. This, O adorable children, is the God. This is the God which cannot ever be limited by man or God-man. This thing, this all things, is now blessed."
What a wonderful message. Thank you for sharing the teachings of Dr. King. And many blessings to you and everything that you do in the future.
It's my privilege, and thank you for being such a wonderful interviewer, really, and hearing me out with such an open mind.
You're most welcome. Thank you so much, Dr. Lawrence.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to be it for this edition. I want to thank Dr. Richard Lawrence again for joining me. I really encourage you to research Dr. George King in your spare time. He was a fascinating man in so many ways. You can also get premium access to enjoy weekly editions by going to patreon.com/mysteriousradio. On top of supporting this show, you will earn yourself some Mysterious Radio merchandise. I want to thank my amazing producer, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I am your host, K-Town. Have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.